Hello, this is Stuart Wilde. Knighty of Conant have asked me to say a few words about my good friend, Dr. Wayne Dyer. I've traveled all over the world appearing on the same bill as Wayne, and a couple of years ago, Wayne, Deepak Chopra and I toured all the major cities of Australia together for a period of 2 weeks. It was a truly amazing experience. I got a lot of opportunity at that time to listen to Wayne and his teachings, and I think the secret of his method is the fact that he can explain aspects of life and the workings of the human mind in simple terms that we can all relate to. I watched him up there on stage, and he has this incredible way of reaching inside people's hearts, calling upon the spirit within them to come out, to embrace a new idea, to embrace a whole new, exciting concept of self. He calls to that spirit within, to that infinity within you, and asks it to come gently out from its hiding place, to step into a new destiny, a new path. I think you will greatly benefit from listening to this wise and knowledgeable man. I have. Wayne is a cool dude, one of the coolest in my view, and a dear friend.
Volume 8. Opening Yourself to Enlightenment.
Transformation is a powerful thing. Transformation means that you begin to transcend some of the normal ways of being. I call it new ways of being. Think for a moment of a clock, face of a clock. You can just imagine, and in fact, here's one right here. This is a watch with a face on it. And you start right up here at the 12, the hour hand. And it goes around and around like this. Now, at this point, symbolically speaking, the hand is moving away from you, okay? As that hand moves away from you, it symbolizes to me, this part of the clock is darkness, and it symbolizes all of the lessons that you have to learn in your life as you move away from yourself. The hatreds, the fighting that you've done in your life, the anger that you've had in your life, the frustrations that you've had, the fears that you have of yourself, the inner conflict, the despair, so much of that. We all go through these periods in our life, okay? And we get down, all the way down to the bottom. And this represents, this six down here represents the furthest away from yourself that you ever get. And that's a turning point in your life. It happens to people at different times in their life, at different ages, at different places in their life. You make a choice at the six. Now, you can be 20, you can be 28, you can be 40, you can be 6, whatever. At this 6, this represents like the crises, the periods in your life where maybe you're going through a divorce, or maybe you're going to have a nervous breakdown at this time, or all of this despairing kinds of qualities that where you've moved away from your true nature, your true self, have occurred. Then you go into the light, and you begin to live in the light if you go past the 6, and you begin moving back towards yourself. And over here is that spiritual awakening. And it has nothing to do with religion. I'm not proselytizing for any religious group or anything like that. It has to do with enlightenment. It has to do with moving back towards your natural self, about being love, not trying to get there, about being the kind of human being who is trying to make not only a difference in themselves, but a difference in the world, who feels a sense of purpose as a human being and understands that their purpose is not to love, but to be love, who understands that person is not to heal, but to be healing, who understands their purpose is much greater and much grander than some methodology or some technique or some strategy that you learn for living, but it has to do with being. And you see, once you get past the 6, you can never go back. See, the clock won't go back. So when you look at this face of this watch as a metaphor for what I'm describing with awakening and with enlightenment, really, once you get past this period where you've moved away from yourself, where you've used all of the things that just don't work for you in your life, where your anger has gotten the best of you and it doesn't work, where your hatreds have just brought you down. See, if you want to look at enlightenment and where you are in the path, look at what you hate. Start with what you dislike. Start with what you fear and what you dislike and what you hate, because that's where you got to start to work. You've got to send love out into the world to every place, even the people who are suing you, even the people who owe you money and haven't repaid you. And the irony is that if you do that, you'll get paid back. It'll come back to you. But as long as you have the hatred and the anger and the anguish and so on, then that will be the thing that will keep you from functioning at an effective level, because it violates the principle, the glue that holds it all together. So you get past the 6, okay? Now you're living in the light. From the 6 up to the 12 is the light. And this is sort of the darkness, the haze, and the very darkness. The bottom is the dark. Now, you can't go back. That's the beautiful thing about enlightenment, is that you can't go backwards.
What I'm offering you here is an opportunity to write a new agreement with what it is that's going to constitute your reality. And this new agreement with what it is that's going to constitute your reality is going to involve you coming up with some ideas and some behaviors and some strategies and some things that you've probably never even considered before. So before you go any further, I want to read to you a very short story, and I'm reading it to you because I want it to come without any paraphrasing. I want it to be exact. It's a story that Buddha told his students as he was preparing them to enter into the world of heightened awareness, or meeting their life's greatest challenge. And their life's greatest challenge is nothing more than learning how to face in a different direction than outward for the sustenance and the purpose and the fulfillment of your life. A young widower who loved his 5-year-old son very much was away on business, and bandits came and burned down his whole village and took his son away. When the man returned, he saw the ruins and panicked. He took the charred corpse of an infant to be his own child, and he began to pull his hair and beat his chest, crying uncontrollably. He organized a cremation ceremony. He collected the ashes and put them in a very beautiful velvet pouch. Working, sleeping, or eating, he always carried the bag of ashes with him. One day his real son escaped from the robbers and found his way home. He arrived at his father's new cottage at midnight and knocked at the door. You can imagine at that time the young father was still carrying the bag of ashes and crying. He asked, "Who is there?" And the child answered, "It's me, Papa. Open the door. It's your son." In his agitated state of mind, the father thought that some mischievous boy was making fun of him, and he shouted at the child to go away and continued to cry. The boy knocked again and again, but the father refused to let him in. Some time passed, and finally the child left. From that time on, father and son never saw one another. After telling this story, the Buddha said, "Sometime, somewhere, you take something to be the truth. If you cling to it so much, when the truth comes in person and knocks on your door, you will not open it." That's a story taken from Legacy of the Heart. The story is very relevant. There are so many things that we take to be a truth, and we hang on to them, and we argue for them, and we fight over them, and we're willing to even go to war over them, or we're willing to even die over them if necessary. But we believe and hang on to these truths, and then something comes along that might challenge these truths. And rather than having an open heart and an open mind and saying, you know, maybe this agreement that I have signed, maybe I've got to consider changing it. It doesn't really give me that sense of what it is that I really want for myself. I'm sort of like what Stuart Wilde called a fringe dweller. I'm dwelling on the fringe, if you will. I'm in the system, but in my heart, there's a part of me that says I want something much more. I want to feel that my life has a deep and rich and fulfilling purpose, and I want to be on purpose in my life at all times.
I read a wonderful book recently called Mutant Message Down Under by Marlo Morgan. Yeah, great book, great book. I just endorsed it for her and wrote her a letter and encouraged everyone to read it. And she went on a spiritual trek with a group of Aborigines in Australia, and she said that the people there learn, because they don't have telephones and they don't have radio and they don't have television, they don't have all of this intercommunication stuff, this kind of technology has taken us away from our own basic ability to communicate telepathically with each other. And these people can communicate with each other when they're 20 miles away and literally can tune into the thoughts of other people. And we think, oh, you can't do that. Well, she experienced this. I really urge you to read that. And I think they're making a movie out of that as well. It's a wonderful, wonderful story. And these people have been labeled as primitive. As a matter of fact, they have decided, this group that she trekked across for 1,000 kilometers across the desert with absolutely nothing. They burned all of her clothing and everything, and they just went for, I think it was 4 months they were on this trek. She had a whole new appreciation for the spirituality of these people. And they have decided in Australia the Aborigines are treated just horribly. And most of them have just tried to fit into this sort of other culture that we call civilized and have ended up just being drug addicts and alcoholics, and they're just not fitting in because they're denying a very basic spiritual part of themselves. And so this group of people has absolutely refused to join that culture. And they've made a decision. There's 63 of them left, and they made a decision to stop having children. And Marlowe's participation with them, this white woman traveling with these Aborigines across the desert and hunting for their food and learning to eat bugs and all of the things that we have come to believe are just anathema to us, which is a way of life with her, with them. And they bless the food that they eat, and they have a very spiritual, divine connection to life and to God. And they've decided that they have fulfilled their mission here, and they are no longer going to procreate. And her going with them on this trek was their way of letting the world know about the basic, quote, primitive spirituality that is in all of us that many of us have lost. So learning that we have the capacity to do these things, and that as you get more and more tuned into the higher part of yourself and allow the triumph of your higher self, which seeks peace and truth and love and absence of conflict and has at its very base love and tolerance and acceptance and kindness and forgiveness, all of the things that Jesus and all the things that Buddha, all of the things that Muhammad, all of the things that all of the great spiritual masters who've ever walked among us have conveyed to us. That as you allow that part of yourself that seeks that and covets that in life to triumph over the more basic, baser parts of ourselves, that you will radiate it outward, and it will become what Victor Hugo said in Les Miserables, there's nothing, nothing, nothing more powerful than an idea whose time has come. It's just a thought, just a thought, just part of that invisible divineness within us. And when you don't doubt that, and you know that you not only have this triumph of your higher self operating in your own life, but when you do, you radiate out that energy around you.
Once you've learned to banish the doubt, begin to say, I am no longer going to have doubts in my mind about my ability. Those are my traitors, as Shakespeare said. And now I'm going to begin to learn how to cultivate the witness. And what is the witness? The witness is the compassionate observer, the part of you that is not in the world of form, that is watching your form. I love Khalil Gibran's simple little reminder. He says, in truth, it is life that gives unto life, while you, who deem yourself a giver, are but a witness. And as you learn to cultivate the witness, it really means getting outside of yourself and learning how to not only witness what is happening in your daily life, but you can begin to witness your body, you can witness your mind, you can witness your entire history, you can witness that which is going on around you, all from the perspective of being the observer. The witness is that part of you where you are placing your attention. And where you place your attention is what you will begin to see manifesting from the world of the formless, the world of the wave, to the world of the particle, the very mechanics of creation. And so if you want to be able to create a life of higher awareness, a life of fulfillment, a life of freedom through this heightened awareness, you must detach yourself from the outcome, as tough as that may seem to be, and just see yourself as that observer, the one who is watching all of this transpire. The greatest affirmation I've ever heard, the one that I repeat every day, whenever something seems to be going wrong, in my world, nothing ever goes wrong. That means that when you live in the world of the spirit, you begin to witness all that is happening and you become the noticer. You can notice your body. You can notice your mind and all of the thoughts that are in your mind. You can notice the past events of your life. You can also notice the things that are going on in your life today and what's going on in the world. All from the perspective of being the dispassionate witness. And all of the great thinkers, no matter where you go, if you want to learn about enlightenment or spiritual awareness, you're going to see them asking you the same thing over and over again. Can you learn to witness your life rather than identify with it? Believe it or not, that's where bliss resides. And that's where heightened awareness resides. And that's where freedom resides. And you will get that freedom when you have learned to banish the doubt, and when you begin to cultivate the witness. And here are just a few suggestions that I would give to you for learning how to cultivate that witness on a daily basis in your life. One of the suggestions that I would recommend is that you begin to notice the noticer. As you take note of your worlds, both inner and outer, begin to familiarize yourself with the noticer. Ask yourself, who is this noticer behind that which is being noticed? All you have to do is do this several times each day, and you begin to see that you are much more than just a body and a mind going through the programmed motions of your life. Your realization of your true self as the witness behind that which is being witnessed will bring you to a new dimension of creativity and bliss. You'll discover, as you really begin to notice the noticer, that you are much more than just your problems.
You are not that which disturbs you. You are not suffering. Only the person you imagine yourself to be is suffering. You cannot suffer. When you know the witness, when you cultivate the witness, you become the observer to that which is taking place in your life. You know that there is some invisible presence within you. You use terms like, I was just saying to myself. Now, there's two people there. There's the I, and then there's the self who is the recipient of whatever it is that you were saying. I was saying to myself, you know, I hurt my arm. Well, are you the arm? Are you that which was experiencing the hurt? You've got to learn that you are not this thing. You have been watching it, and you have to learn to cultivate the witness. And witnessing is a beautiful experience. You've all learned how to witness your body. You know that you're not this body, yet you still play games with it. You still perfume it, and you still insure it, and you still build a mortgage around it, and you still try to lift it, and you still try to get things fixed on it and all of that. But you'd also know that there's someone behind there doing all of this. Like if I say, I'm going to wiggle my finger, and then I do it, you don't think that's a big deal. And you say, well, where's the command center that allows you to wiggle your finger? You say, well, let's do an autopsy, and you open up, and you look at the brain, you look in the medulla, you look and you say, well, here are the synapses, and here are the neural connectors, and there's the command center, which allows you to say, like, I'm going to wiggle my finger. But there's no autopsy on this planet that will ever reveal the commander in the command center who says, I'm going to wiggle my finger. Where is that? Who is that? What is that? Who's the commander? And that's who you are. And when you cultivate the witness, you begin to understand the mechanics of creation. That which we observe and focus on at the very tiniest subatomic, subatomic level, there are particles that are so small that no one has ever seen them. The only reason we know that they exist is that they leave traces in what we call particle accelerators. And when we observe them, they're there, and when we take our attention off of them, they disappear. And the very mechanics of creation is that which you keep your attention and focus on, it will itself manifest. Observation, the very act, that's what the Tao of Physics is about, that's what the Dancing Woolly Masters is about, that's what all of this quantum reality, Walensky's great work, Quantum Enlightenment, all of this is about. That which we observe literally moves from the wave state to the particle state through the process of observation. It's all energy. When we had Newtonian physics, we used to think that there was the physical world made up of atoms and electrons and neutrons and protons and croutons or whatever it is that was in those things. And over here, that was the physical world, and over here was the spiritual. And there was a leap of faith in order to go from the physical to the spiritual. You had to have a kind of faith that this was a different world over here. Now what we've learned with quantum mechanics, quantum physics, is that that which we used to think of as different, the physical world and the spiritual world, now when we look at the physical world and break it down to its tiniest and tiniest and tiniest places, we discover that there are no particles. There's only energy there. And that which we used to think of as different from us, that is, God was out here, and you had to pray to it, and God knows all the wars that were fought over how you do that, and all the crusades, and all the horrors that were inflicted on billions of people, since as long as we know about it, is based upon this whole idea of God is something that I know and you don't, and it's not within you. Now we discover scientifically what metaphysicians have been saying for centuries, that it is within us. That these tiny little particles that we think of as reality are nothing more than energy. And that energy is in everything and everywhere, and it's invisible. And it's in every one of us. So when you learn to cultivate the observer, what you're really doing is putting your attention on that which you want to manifest. Now, you can observe your body, but you don't sit around and worry about that. You're not busy beating your hearts right now, are you? You just sort of observe. You say, all right, do what you got to do. I'm not attached to it. You're not inflating your lungs. When you have lunch or when you have dinner tonight, you're not consumed with whether it's all going to get to the right places and come out the right places. And I hope it doesn't come out my ear this time. You just sort of observe it, and you just sort of let it go. Now, you can also learn to do this with your mind. You can literally become the witness to your mind and watch the thoughts come and go in your life. What a great idea this is. Because we think that we are our thoughts, and we think the dichotomy is between the body and the mind, but it's not. The mind-body are the same. The dichotomy is between the body-mind and the soul. Spirit, your higher awareness, the witness. And you have to be able to witness that.
Listen to Lao Tzu, writing in the Tao Ching. He says, empty yourself of everything. Let the mind rest at peace. The 10,000 things rise and fall while the self watches their return. They grow and flourish and then return to the source. Returning to the source is stillness, which is the way of nature. The way of nature is unchanging. Knowing constancy is insight. Not knowing constancy leads to a disaster. Knowing constancy, the mind is open. With an open mind, you will be open-hearted. Being open-hearted, you will act royally. Being royal, you will attain the divine. Being divine, you will be at one with the Tao. Being at one with the Tao is eternal. And though the body dies, the Tao will never pass away. There's an awful lot of profound thoughts in there. You have to think of the mind like a pond. And the pond has different levels. At the surface of the pond, which is not what the pond is all about, it's just a little tiny percentage of the pond, is where all the disturbances are. The mind is very much like that. At the surface of the mind is where all the disturbances are. And the pond, it's the leaves and the constant freezing and thawing and the dirt and the wind and the tumultuousness of the waves and the rain hitting it and the snow pelting it and so on. That's all the disturbances of the pond. In the mind, it's this constant chatter, this constant reiteration. And it's like you have to drop a pebble through the mind. That goes down a little bit below the surface, and just below the surface, we have what we call analysis, which is really nothing more than intellectual violence, just picking things apart. And the mind, just below the surface, is constantly doing this. Why did he do that, and why did she do that, and why is this working that way? And then as you learn to meditate or to get quiet or be contemplative, you go a little deeper in the mind. The pebble drops below the level of analysis to what we call synthesis. And in synthesis, rather than tearing things apart, is how things are held together. And the mind begins to see the connection between things. You begin to have the illusion of your separateness shattered, and you see how everything is connected. And as the pebble drops a little further, you begin to quiet the mind so that you just empty it of thoughts. And you go a little deeper than that, and the pebble goes to the place where we call emptying the mind, where all thoughts are just removed. And you get very quiet. You get into that gap, that space between your thoughts. And ultimately, the pebble comes to rest in this divine and perfect place that has many names. For some, it's called the unified field. For some, it's called the field of all possibilities. But here is where God resides. Here is that divineness that is within you. As it says in St. Matthew, with God, all things are possible. Now, you tell me what that leaves out. It leaves out nothing. And in the unified field, where you allow yourself to shut down the inner dialogue through the process of cultivating the witness and banishing the doubt, now you begin to have this knowing. That's how you abandon the belief systems that are attached to doubt and come to know. It is here
in this unified field that your beliefs begin to shift to knowings, and you banish all the doubt about your higher self.
When I was finishing my doctorate at Wayne State University, back then I had to take a philosophy course. And I had a professor, his name was Milton Kavinsky, and he was fantastic. This was one of the greatest teachers I ever had. And we had 16 weeks, there were 16 students in this advanced seminar in applied metaphysics. And we had to each of us take a particular philosophical point of view, and we had to present it to the class for 2.5 hours, and then Kavinsky would talk about it for an hour. But we had to present it in such a way that it would be applicable. We had to present it to people to say, when we leave this room today, you will change your life in some way if you can adopt these ideas. And so I took one particular philosopher, and someone else would take another group, and we had these 16 schools. And that was it. Now, this was a required course to get your PhD. And he talked about the final. And we all had to take a final exam. And the final exam, he said, it's a 3 hours and 40 minutes it's going to take you to write. And you can come in with as many blue books. You remember those blue books you'd come in with, and you'd empty them, and you figured if you could BS your way through it, just write, as you know, just fill it, you know, that somehow he wouldn't realize that you didn't know what the hell you were talking about. But Kavinsky wasn't like that. He read them all. He also said it's open book. You can bring all the books, you can bring all the material, anything that you want into class. And so, you know, we were prepared. And finally, the day of the final arrived, and I came in with, like, you know, a stack of books, like this, carrying them. And the whole room was just filled with all these people with books. And Kavinsky passed out our exam. And he walked in, he said, this will be your exam. And it was 10 in the morning. He said, you'll have till 20 minutes to 2 to write. And you can use anything you want. And he left the room. He said, okay, turn over your paper. Turn over the paper, and the question is one question on there. 3 words. Who are you? With a question mark. And that's it. Who are you? So we're all looking at each other, and we got all these books over here. Our resource material, we're going to use all of this stuff. And he comes sauntering back, and he was like Columbo. Remember, you know the Columbo character? Like always forgetting something, but he always knew exactly what he was doing. And he walked back in, and he had an old suit on, and he said, oh, I forgot. I don't know what's the matter. I forgot the second sheet. There's another thing I knew I had to my secretary. And, you know, he's doing this whole routine that he's, you know, meantime we're all over there, you know, sweating this. This is a course that if you don't pass it, you're back to bagging groceries at Kroger's, okay? So it's, you know, you either pass this and or you don't. So he passes out this second sheet. He said, these are all the things, he wrote this all out, that you may not write about. In fact, if you include any references to any of these things in your answer, it constitutes a failure of this particular seminar. And then he listed all of these things that we couldn't write about. He said, I don't care about, and you may not write about, your age, your family background, your goals, any of your hobbies, your religious orientation, your voting preferences, your geographical, you know, how much money you've made in your life. I don't care about what you think that you might ever do in your life or how many people are in your family or what, you know, it's like. And he lists, he has about 60 of these things that we were just all getting ready to do our little autobiography on, you know. And then at the bottom of the sheet, he has a quotation from Soren Kierkegaard, the great Danish theologian. And it says, once you label me, you negate me. And then he left the room for good. And I'd like you to think about that as an assignment. If you had to sit down right now and write for 2.5 hours or 3.5 hours on who you are without using any labels. And I'd hopefully, in the time that I have here with you this afternoon, can help you to perhaps do that.
I give the example often of having two selves, and one self is a thought, and the other self is a form. If you hear somebody say to themselves, you jerk, you dummy, you shouldn't have done that, you've got two people there. You've got the person who is doing the name calling, that is the thought, who's saying, you jerk, you got that. And then you got the jerk, who is the body that has to react to what kind of thoughts that you have. So if you call yourself a dummy or a fool or a jerk, you have a thought of jerk, and you have the jerk who has to react. And what you want to do and what meditation can help you to do is to bring into harmony those two selves, so that self one, the thought, and self two, the body, the form, are in unity, are in oneness, and that you are only calling yourself what you want yourself to be. And you're only seeing what it is that you want in your mind, what you want your body to do. So as you go into meditation, what happens is that you leave this body and you enter into that invisible world, that formless, dimensionless world of thought, and you then begin to realize that you're not even your thoughts, that you almost are watching yourself from a consciousness point of view. You're watching yourself think, and then you watch yourself react to the thoughts. And you can literally ask yourself, what's the solution to this? Or what can I do? Or why is this a problem for me? Or why am I creating this in my life? Or why am I having such a difficult time with my wife? Or why am I always having so much time with this particular person on the job? Or what is it about me where I always create I set up myself to fail? Answers begin to come floating right into your consciousness from a higher part of you, which you'll never see if you don't believe. And you can begin to apply this. There's a wonderful story of a man who was bothered and troubled by a car honking. He is awakened by this car that is honking for his neighbors next door. He says to his wife, if I had magical powers, I would be able to put 4 flat tires into that car every time he comes here. And his wife said, No, you don't have it yet. And then he said, well, if I had magical powers, I'd be able to put a silencer on that horn, and I wouldn't even be able to hear that horn. That's what I could do if I had magical powers. She said, no. She said, if you had magical powers, you wouldn't be disturbed by that horn.
When the question was asked of Dr. Maslow, when I asked him this question personally, what does it mean to be self-actualized? He said there are 3 things that you have to know and understand. One is you have to learn to become independent of the good opinion of other people. That's like at the top of the list. You have to become independent. Self-actualizers are independent of the good opinion of other people. Secondly, self-actualizers are people who have no attachment to the outcome. They are detached from the fruits of their labors. They know what their life is about, and they get on with that, and they don't get themselves concerned with how it's going to work out. They turn that over to God. They just have this knowing that it will, and that's enough. And the third is that they have no investment in power over other people. No investment in power over other people. So they're not really trying to convince anybody else or to subjugate anybody else or to dominate anyone else with their abilities. And these people who have these divine capacities are usually very, very quiet about it. And they will get disapproval and they will acknowledge it. And it's okay. They just move along. They don't allow that to be the focus of what it is that they're going to do in their lives. I can't tell you how many people, but it's up in the hundreds of thousands, that have written to me over the past quarter of a century and told me their difficulties, their struggles, and how if they would have learned one of these 3 lessons, or all 3 of these lessons, to be independent of the good opinion of other people, to be detached from the outcome, and to get rid of your investment in the need to have power over other people, how much peace you would have in your life.
Heightened awareness is living and identifying your awareness on that which is changeless and eternal, rather than that which is always changing and always shifting. You're going to learn to stand up to your desires. You won't be repressed. You're going to be free. You're going to learn to laugh at those selfish desires. Listen to this beautiful quote of St. Augustine.
He's talking about desire, and he's talking about will. Will being the ability to stand up to the desire. He says, I was in both camps, but there was a little more of me on the side I approved than on the side I disapproved. For it had become more a matter of unwillingly experiencing my desires than of doing something that I actively wanted. That is the turning point. The desire is still there, but he is losing his identification with it. And that's what happens when you get higher awareness. A lot of studies have been done on the difference in business between leaders and followers, or what I think of as highly functioning people, and normals, or neurotics, if you will. There are two things that really separate them out, and they're related to this business about enlightenment is the way. One, it seems to me, that is most important, is that a leader is someone who sees the connection to the whole, the oneness, the unity. And followers rarely do. And you can get leaders from people who are in positions of followers if you look for these two qualities. The first is seeing the big picture, if you will, or the connection to the whole. Leaders always seem to see that. Whereas followers, if you've got a large corporation within a department, the follower or the normal or the neurotic, whatever you want to call them, is somebody who only sees their job and what they have to do. So they get trained to do this particular thing, and they don't really see how it impacts on the next department and on the next department and on the entire company and on the entire corporate structure. They're not able to see that. They will say things like, it's not my department. I don't do those kind of things. It's not my responsibility. You have to go to the accounting department to get at that, or you'll have to call shipping, or whatever it may be. And they stay that way. It's like they have that quality, and they almost stay that way their entire lives. There's no connection to the whole. Whereas a leader will see that everything that a person does within a department, not only how it affects them in the department, but how it affects the next department, and how it affects the entire business, and how it affects the profit picture, and so on. And so you will see leaders being conscious of the entire business unit. And that person will almost always elevate up to a point where they get to the top of the business or in positions of leadership because they're not just narrowly looking at how what I do affects just me. The second thing is that leaders, as opposed to followers, are people who see the long-range effect of everything that is being done. They don't look at just how I'm acting today. For example, if you're getting on an airplane and a flight attendant is rude to a customer, the leader, if they're sitting there looking at that, or even if they're a flight attendant who has these leader qualities, not only sees how that impacts on the entire organization, the entire airline, but they see how that impacts on future business as well. A year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now, if I have a bad experience with a person on an airline that turns me off to them, it isn't that individual that I'm going to be turned off to because they're just out of my life now. So the next time I'm going to make a reservation, I'm going to pick a different airline if there's one available. I might do that for 10 years. So that one tiny moment of truth that you have as a follower with a customer, if that person doesn't see the whole and doesn't also see the long range, that will affect them dramatically. And leaders always seem to know that. And so they're not just being polite and service-oriented and kind and decent to people because that's what they've been trained to do. They are being that way, first of all, because that's the way they are. That's the way they think. And as a result of the way they think, they see their connection to not only the organization and the future of the organization, they see a bigger picture. And that's really what this is about. That's what the whole thing is about. It's like seeing the biggest picture of all, that how you behave towards your fellow man not only affects you and them and the organization and the profit picture a year from now or 2 years from now, but it affects all of us. It affects all of mankind. It's that big a picture that I'm trying to get at here. Yes, there are little tiny segments that we may be more interested in
But that makes us followers, too, when you think about it. I mean, if you're only thinking about your airline or you're only thinking about your company and how their behavior impacts on the organization or in the future, then you're still limiting yourself because it also impacts on your city or your community, and it impacts on your country, and it impacts on the world, and it impacts on all of humanity, and it impacts on the universe as well. I work for myself. I'm not in anybody else's business. I see the biggest picture of all, that that ripples throughout all of humanity. And you can bring it back down to apply these principles in your daily business and in your family and in your relationship, but you can expand them outward as well so that you begin to see that every negative act, every hostile act, everything that is not in harmony that you do, every person who is not in harmony, that person cannot cooperate with the person next to him. He will want to gobble them up like a cancer. And when they are in harmony, and enough of us get into harmony, then it impacts on the entire planet. So we have to be able to extend our vision. If we're thinking of ourselves as leaders, it's one thing to be a great leader within your corporation, or even within your department, or even within your own family. But another thing completely to be a great leader of mankind. And we all have to see ourselves that way. We have to extend out as far as we can and back down as small as we can. And that's how it impacts on everything and everyone. What I'd like to do here is offer you a series of suggestions, some specific things that you can do on a daily basis to bring this state of heightened awareness into your life. First of these is that you can remind yourself daily that you really are here to fulfill a divine and heroic mission, that this is part of the plan of the universe. And each day you can make an attempt to serve others in some small way and to do it without telling anyone, without looking for any credit, just letting go of your own self and your own thoughts and your own self-absorption and saying, how may I serve others? Because it is in the serving of others that we begin to feel that higher sense. So at some time in this day, whether it's just letting someone in the freeway and just nodding to them, or whether it's sending someone a few dollars that maybe is standing there on the road asking for money, thinking of some positive thing, loving thing that you can do without asking anything back. They say that the hand that gives gathers, and it's learning how to put that into your own life. This is a truth that I read every single day. It says, when you seek happiness for yourself, it will always elude you. When you seek happiness for others, you will find it yourself. And that's really the secret of happiness, is to stop looking for it yourself and saying, how can I find it for others? Another suggestion for meeting this challenge, your life's greatest challenge, is to get a clear picture in your mind of something that you would like to see happen in your life. Maybe it's a job, maybe it's attracting the perfect partner, or quitting an addiction, or finding your soulmate, or whatever it may be. And what I'd like you to do is just keep your inner focus on this picture and extend love outward as frequently as possible with this picture in mind. Just surround that picture with love. The details will get handled if you can keep the picture in your mind with a knowing and just put love around that picture. And don't doubt it. And even if you don't see it manifesting for yourself right away, just keep the picture there. And before long, you're going to start seeing these bizarre coincidences. It's called going into the gap between your thoughts. And in that silent, empty place right there, in that gap, the universe handles it all for you. Another suggestion that I would give to you is to have conversations with God in a very private and very special way for yourself. And in these conversations, rather than asking for special favors, just affirm your willingness, just your willingness to use all that you are and all of your inner strength to create solutions. Rather than asking for a solution, just ask for the strength and then be willing to do what is necessary. And as you create this new relationship with this higher part of yourself, you begin to see that the strength is there because that's where you place your attention. And where you place your attention is what you're going to manifest. One suggestion that I have found very helpful in attaining heightened awareness for myself is that I have tried to remove the concept of enemy from my thoughts completely. The whole idea that there are people on the planet that are my enemy is just really what other egos have been trained to believe. And we have some of these ancient enmities, hatreds and angers, going from generation to generation just on the basis of having whole new souls who come through being taught that this is who you're supposed to hate. This is a round planet, and on a round planet there are no choosing upsides. We are all in this thing together, and the idea that somehow there are some people who are more special than others is the ego talking again. It's that whole idea of separateness and specialness. Once you have that awareness, the ego is now subsided. You see, you have tamed the ego when you've accepted that there are no enemies. And I've often said in my speeches over the years, I'll say, how many people are there in Russia? You say, 250, 300 million people. I say, can you think of anybody in Russia that you hate? Is there anybody in this room who hates someone in Russia, like some commie grandmother over there who's walking around in commie tennis shoes, you know? Do you hate that person over there? Do you hate one of those little Russian children over there or some Russian salesman over there? And there's never a hand goes up. And yet we have spent, in that whole Cold War period, we have spent billions and billions and trillions of dollars in creating weapons to kill these very people, and no one hates anyone over there. The problem isn't so much that we hate somebody over there, it's that we just haven't learned to love them enough. And once we've learned to love each other enough and to transcend that idea of having enemies completely, and when enough of us do it, then we will create that heightened awareness. And you do that not just with people who are living on the other side of the globe, but you do that with people in your own family and in your own neighborhoods and in your own business. When you can send love to them rather than hatred, you open up the internal energy source that gives you heightened awareness. Another suggestion I have for you is to surrender. And this really involves an act of the heart. Surrendering takes place in a moment. And the way that you surrender is you just stop asking, why me? Why is this happening to me? Surrendering means that you just let go. And I found that when I just surrender, I just say, okay, if I'm on purpose, that is, if I'm here to serve, and rather than being self-absorbed, I'm just here to serve, I find that I'm not alone. When you learn to surrender and let go and know that you're not alone any longer, then heightened awareness begins to take over. The universe handles the details, and your higher self begins to rule, and you've gotten your ego out of the way. I think perhaps one of the most important suggestions I can give you is to give yourself time each day for silence. Just silence. You can call it whatever you want. You can call it meditation. You can call it prayer. You can call it chanting. You can call it whatever it is that you want to call it. But just give yourself some time each day to just get quiet and get to know the voice of God. It isn't so much what you do while you are silent. It's what you are able to bring back from your silence. But if you have something that is really troubling you and is really a struggle for you in your life, and you just give yourself 20 minutes to 30 minutes to just get quiet and to just push all of the thoughts out, and you're going to be able to bring back from that silence the solutions to the things that are really a struggle for you. See, the greatest tribute you can give yourself is a moment of silence. Just like when someone passes on that is very dear to us, we give them that moment of silence. Give yourself the same tribute, and you're going to find yourself reaching higher states of awareness. Just 20, 30 minutes a day. Another suggestion I would offer you to create this heightened state of awareness is to lighten your load beginning today. Go through all of the possessions that you no longer use and begin to share them with others. You can do this with virtually everything you own. Doing that kind of thing, not because you need to be charitable, but because you want to keep your load light. Just lighten up a little bit and don't tell yourself that you have to have these things. Everything that you have to have owns you, and you can't have heightened awareness when anything owns you. The final suggestion I have for reaching this heightened state of awareness is to begin to direct your attention to that which pleases you. Remember that what you think about is what expands. Keep your thoughts, just that mental energy of yours, on that which is pleasing and that which is inspiring in your own life. And every time you have a tendency to have a thought that isn't in that category, then just very gently move it out. Just say next, next, and just pass that one out. And keep your attention focused there. And while you're driving to work and while you're in your own home or whatever it is, instead of putting on the television and listening to all the distressing news and all of the kinds of things that just have a tendency to bring you down, put on a tape or soft, gentle music. Just try to get out of the habit of having your attention distracted with negativity, which is what news and the whole tabloid mentality is really pushing on us today. Allow yourself to think positive things by putting in positive tapes. or positive music, and you're going to see heightened awareness showing up every day in your life.